Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Nation on God's green earth, and what a great day it is to take a detailed look at one of the greatest, most impassioned, most faithful conflicts of our time. It's a conflict that doesn't take place in the United States, but the United States is very directly involved. I'm talking about the conflict at the heart of the Middle East and its struggles, the conflict between Israel and her Arab neighbors. Usually on this show, we focus on issues directly involving America. Of course this involves America. We'll talk about how and why as part of this very special show. A show trying to cut through all of the confusion, all of the controversy, all of the conflict involving this conflict as we take a look at why they fight, the story of the Arab-Israeli struggle. And of course, when you start trying to tell that story, you go very far back in time indeed. The Jewish relationship to the spot of land, and it really isn't very much land at all, the little spot of land that today is known as Israel, goes back to the forefather Abraham, who first came to that land, historians say, about 2000 B.C., in other words, 4,000 years ago. But Abraham didn't stay. I mean, he stayed, he wandered back and forth, he was a nomad. Eventually, his grandchildren and great-grandchildren went to Egypt. And what that meant was that a permanent Jewish presence in what is today Israel began when Moses led the Jews out of Egyptian slavery and Joshua conquered the Canaanites. It's all described in the Bible. Historians suggest that that happened about 1200 B.C. In other words, 3,200 years ago. But wait a minute. That's a very long history. The Palestinians on their side claim that they are descended from the Canaanites who Joshua displaced. And indeed, one of their early capitals of the Palestine Authority was in Jericho, one of those cities that Joshua conquered when he came into the land. The claims on this piece of real estate are extraordinary and they're ancient. And one of the things that is rather surprising about it is you'd think, given the level of intensity with which people have claimed this bit of land over the ages, over the millennia, that it was some kind of amazing garden spot. But those of you who have been to Israel, who have toured the Holy Land, understand that it isn't just physical beauty, it isn't productivity, it isn't any sort of blessed nature of water supply or greenery or anything like that that makes this land so special. It's the history associated with it. And after Joshua came in to the land and a Jewish commonwealth was established there, they usually date the establishment of the monarchy, the kings of Israel, in the 11th century B.C., under King Saul and then later King David and King Solomon, the construction of the temple in Jerusalem. All of this is occurring close to 1,000 years before Christ. And during a very, very long period of time, there clearly was, and there is no historical doubt about this at all. I mean, the archaeological evidence is there, the historical evidence is there, not only in the Bible, but as repeated by Greek and Roman historians and many others, that there was a flourishing Jewish commonwealth called Israel, called Judea. There were two kingdoms that split. And yes, the Jews were exiled originally in 586 B.C., when Jerusalem was conquered by the Babylonians. They came back less than 50 years later. rebuilt the temple 70 years later, and then continued to live on that spot of land for another more than 400 years until the Romans destroyed the second temple in 70 AD. And now you're talking about all kinds of very well-recorded history. The destruction of that second temple was only one generation after the crucifixion of Jesus. And this is very well recorded. There are Roman statues about it. There's a famous Arch of Titus in Rome that shows the Roman troops taking home the artifacts from the temple. Even after the destruction of the Second Temple and the exile of the Jews, and this unimaginable disaster where most historians suggest that up to 1 million people, men, women, and children, were slaughtered, and the remaining population of the land, perhaps another 1 million, maybe even as many as 2 million, most of them were sold off into slavery and sent into exile. Because the Romans, having dealt with a horrible and very stubborn Jewish rebellion against Roman rule, didn't want to deal with that anymore. And they actually wanted to wipe out the Jewish identity of this land. Remember, Jews had lived here, had had a commonwealth here for more than 1,000 years. The Romans wanted to extinguish that. And so they changed the name of the Roman province. They changed the name from Judea, to Philistia, Palestine. Naming it after Palestina, it became in the Roman jargon. They named it after the Philistines, who had been the arch enemies of the Jewish people, of the Hebrew people. There weren't many Philistines left at the time, but it was a gesture that the Romans took very seriously, just like they took very seriously knocking down every scrap of the Holy Temple on the Temple Mount, and they actually sewed over the Temple Mount in salt, so it would be desolate and nothing would grow there. Yet there remained in Israel a Jewish community forever. Despite the fact that people were exiled, despite the fact that they had undergone this tremendous disaster, which is observed to this day by Jews around the world with an annual fast day, the ninth day of the month of Av, which is the day that both of the great temples were destroyed, despite all of that, there was a continual Jewish presence in the land of Israel. In fact, even after the destruction of the Second Temple, people kept streaming back and coming back and resettling. Large communities were reestablished in Jerusalem and in Tiberia and Tiberias by the 800s. And in the 11th century, in the 1000s, Jewish communities grew in Rafa, Gaza, Ashkelon, Jaffa, and Caesarea. So the idea that somehow the Jews had disappeared from their land, simply not true. Because even in the Middle Ages, when the population of the territory was overwhelmingly Arab, there was a very real Jewish presence. But what about the bulk of the population? Well, what had happened is under Roman rule, the population had been devastated. And when Rome became Christian, the official, and Rome also split into the Byzantine Empire, into the Eastern Empire and the Western Empire. Well, Israel was under the eastern part of the Roman Empire, and that Roman province, Palestine, was Christian. Not heavily Christian, because there were people who practiced all sorts of different local religions, and there was also a Jewish presence remaining there. But it was Christian until the 600s. And in the 600s, briefly, Persia came in, conquered the land from the Byzantines, from the Eastern Roman Empire. And then about 20 years later, and that's all, after the Persians conquered it, the followers of Muhammad, the early Muslims, came in and conquered what was then the Roman, Eastern Roman province of Palestine, and made it Muslim. Now, one thing that's very important to understand is Muhammad never set foot in his life on anywhere on the territory of Israel. The whole association of Muhammad with Israel is he had a dream which is recorded in the Holy Quran. And the dream says he went to a distant province. And from that distant province, he departed to heaven in his dream. And they have identified by tradition, though it's not specified in the Quran, that that distant province was Jerusalem, and that that was the site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the site of the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount. But the name Jerusalem is never mentioned in the Holy Quran.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. Back when MyPillow was invented, it had everything you could want in a pillow. Now, nearly two decades later, they've discovered a new technology that makes MyPillow even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with brand new fabric that is made with a temperature-regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. Say goodbye to tossing and turning and flipping your pillow over in the middle of the night, and more great news on the MyPillow 2.0, buy one, get one free with promo code MEDVED. MyPillow 2.0 with its temperature-regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio podcast square to receive the MyPillow 2.0 buy one, get one free offer. Just when you thought MyPillow couldn't get any better, MyPillow 2.0 gives you the best pillow ever. Enter promo code MEDVED at MyPillow.com to get your MyPillow 2.0s today.
Why be held back by pain and difficulty and soreness and stiffness when Relief Factor is available and available so readily? You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. This is $19.95 for a three-week quick start, which can reduce the inflammation, it can reduce the pain, it can reduce the soreness and stiffness and make you feel better. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, michaelmedved.com, find the banner for Relief Factor. If you're troubled by Washington moving toward more government control, income taxes, rent control, and centralized decision-making, now is the time for you to take action. At Washington Policy Center, we want free market reforms that make Washington the best place to raise a family, to get a job, or to start a business. WPC is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. Get off the sidelines. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org.
It's obvious the unthinkable is happening. With all the recent media distractions, most folks never saw it coming. But a few did. Their guts told them something very wrong was going on. And now the headlines are proving them right. The people in charge keep telling you that everything's fine and to stop noticing. But you know better. Folks are investing in emergency food storage. And you should too. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, are the ones you can trust. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling three-month emergency food kits. Each contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one for each family member. My Patriot Supply also sells biomass stoves, off-grid room heaters for when the power goes out, gravity-powered water filters, heirloom seeds, and survival gear that may come in handy soon. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today. It's time to prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Broadcast. Try trying to do the almost impossible, which is to make some sense and give you some clarity concerning the story of the Arab-Israeli conflict, why they fight. We were talking right before the break about the Muslim takeover of Jerusalem, which was in 637 A.D. It was just 5 years after the great prophet Muhammad died. And at this moment, you have to understand the tremendous explosion of energy and creativity and genius, and that's really the only word for it, that was associated with the Muslim conquests that were sweeping everything in front of them. The truth of the matter is that for the first time, the Arab peoples were expanding the borders of their control. And they marched into Jerusalem, they marched into Israel, and made it part of their empire. And it was a glittering empire. There's no question at all that at the time of the great glory of the Arab Caliphate, of the Arab Empire centered in the Middle East, centered in Baghdad and Damascus, after leaving the old home of the Muslim religion and Mecca and Medina and Saudi Arabia, the tremendous status of this civilization made it far more advanced than anything that was going on in the West in terms of science, architecture, poetry, just general level of civilization, livability for the people who lived in that civilization. And this is very, very important to keep in mind, because this memory of the great glory of the early years of Muslim civilization is very much alive in the minds of so many, many Muslim people today, very much including Osama bin Laden. But the interesting point about their taking over Jerusalem and their taking over the land of Israel was they never made it a separate land. It was always just part of the Ummah, part of the Muslim world. And here's something else that's fascinating. Though Jerusalem was undoubtedly important to the Muslims, and they built a mosque there, and then they built another mosque there, important mosques. In fact, the story is that they asked Jewish shepherd boys who were left in Jerusalem where the site of the old temple was, because they wanted to put the mosque right there on top of the site of the old Jewish temple, and they did pretty close. So that has created all kinds of difficulties down to the present day. But they built these mosques, and they built it up, but they never used Jerusalem ever. During all the years of Muslim occupancy of the land of Israel, never did they make Jerusalem even a provincial capital. Baghdad was a capital. Damascus was a capital. Istanbul was a capital when the Ottoman Empire took over, the Muslim Ottoman Empire took over in 1517. Jerusalem never was. Jerusalem was always something of a backwater. It was not only not a world capital, it wasn't even a capital of a separate province. And this is one of those things that is, it's absolutely true. You can check it. It is very, very uncomfortable to say because it's politically incorrect. But it needs to be said, there never, ever was a separate country in the area of Israel other than the ancient Jewish kingdom of Israel and the modern Jewish nation of Israel. In all that intervening time, when the Jewish people were in exile, what was the land of Israel, just geographically, was part of the Roman Empire, then it was part of the Byzantine Empire, the Eastern Roman Empire, then for 20 years it was part of the Persian Empire, then after that it was part of the Arab Empire, then the Ottoman Turks took over in 1517, and then after World War I the British took over. But at no time was there an independent, self-governing, separate state other than just a backward province of some other empire, at no time until the modern state of Israel came into existence in 1948. And the idea that there was a nation of Palestine and that it was glorious and that it was important is simply not true. And how do we know that? Let me cite you the statement of an Arab American historian, very distinguished guy. He taught at Princeton University, Professor Filippiti, who spoke to an Anglo-American committee in 1946, and he said, there is no such thing as Palestine in history. Absolutely not. In fact, Palestine is never explicitly mentioned in the Quran. Rather, it is called simply the Holy Land. And this was very much the attitude even of most Arabs who lived in that area. They did not see themselves until much later as Palestinians with some kind of separate identity. They were just Arabs. They were Muslims. They were part of this world group that was very important. For instance, when the first Congress of the Muslim Christian Association met in Jerusalem in February of 1919 to choose Palestinian representatives for the Paris Peace Conference at the end of World War I, they adopted the following resolution, quote, "We consider Palestine as part of Arab Syria, as it has never been separated from it at any time. We are connected with it by national, religious, linguistic, natural, economic, and geographical bonds." The idea of a separate nation of Palestine, a separate Arab nation of Palestine, didn't really begin to be taken seriously until 1967, after the Six-Day War. But we will get to that. The important thing here is, what about the Jewish people who had once lived in the land of Israel and who still lived in the land of Israel in fairly substantial numbers? From 1800 on, there was a Jewish majority, for instance, in the city of Jerusalem, even though the population of the city of Jerusalem was pathetic. You know, in 1844, they took a census. The Turks ran Jerusalem. You know what the population of that city was? It was 15,000. 15,000. Majority Jewish. But you're talking about a very, very backward, out-of-the-way province and a very out-of-the-way city in terms of the city of Jerusalem. Jews scattered all over the world after the destruction of the Second Temple. There was another revolt by Jews remaining in the land of Israel, the revolt of Shimon Bar Kokhba, who was a pretender, a false messiah, and that was crushed in 135 A.D., and further Jews were distributed all around the world, and they were everywhere, really, in Eastern Europe and Western Europe, very much in Spain and North Africa. And yet, Jewish people remained focused on the land of Israel. In prayers every day, three times a day, morning, afternoon, and evening prayers, religious Jews to this day remember Jerusalem and ask for a return to Jerusalem and a reestablishment of a Jewish nation there. Though it's probably only in the very recent years, the last 100 years or so, that people have begun to believe that their own actions could begin to make some of those prayers come true and to be answered. We'll talk about some of those actions that enabled those answered prayers as soon as we come back.
This is an urgent warning. America is heading for another major financial disaster at an alarming rate. We could see stock prices fall as much as 50%, but this time the crash could be more violent and come faster than you ever imagined. We are Advantage Gold, America's most trusted precious metals company, and we are here to sound the alarm that winter is coming for investors. And now is the time to take actions that may help protect and secure your portfolio with physical precious metals. Want to help protect your hard-earned money before it's too late? Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000 and request our free gold and silver survival kit today. Mention that you heard us on the radio and learn how you could get up to $1,000 in free silver coins. The number is 800-900-8000. Call now to get your free survival kit and see if you qualify for $1,000 in free silver today.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
USA News Update. Israeli troops have surrounded Gaza and are preparing to go in and flush out the terrorist organization Hamas. Israel said its forces have split Gaza into North Gaza and South Gaza after troops reached Gaza's coastline. The U.S. continues to push for a humanitarian pause in fighting, but Israel has ignored the Biden administration, saying all hostages held by Hamas would need to be released first as a part of the deal. Recent attacks in Iraq and Syria against American forces may have resulted in injuries to as many as 45 U.S. service members. According to NBC News, this number is more than double what the Biden administration had disclosed. Since October, bases housing U.S. personnel have been targeted in dozens of attacks. It's believed that the drone attacks and rocket attacks were carried out by Hezbollah, financed by Iran. Lance Pry, USA News.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Did you receive a call or message that mentioned Social Security and demanded immediate action? Did the caller know your Social Security number or other personal information and tell you that your Social Security number had been used in connection with the crime? Did you feel worried that your Social Security number might be suspended, your bank account might be frozen or seized, or you could be arrested? That is not the Social Security Administration. Social Security will not threaten you, demand your personal information or instant payment, email or text you pictures or documents, or use a real government official's name to gain your trust. Social Security does not accept payments by gift card, prepaid debit card, internet currency, or by mailing cash. Criminals use these forms of payment because they are hard to trace. Do not be fooled. Hang up. Ignore them. Report this criminal activity to the Social Security Administration Office of the Inspector General at oig.ssa.gov.
Michael Medved.
Here you go again.
And on the Michael Medved show, one of the things that the current arguments that you see and the demonstrations that you see and some of the outspoken denunciations that you hear about what's going on in the Middle East are proofs that the American people, most of the American people, don't know that much about Israel. And they don't know much about some of the good news from Israel because it's not all a terrorist hell on earth. In fact, quite the contrary. Even the UN recently rated Israel as the fourth happiest nation out of 180 on planet Earth. Dan Senor is our guest, and it's very great pleasure to speak to him again. He wrote a previous New York Times bestseller together with Saul Singer, and the previous bestseller was called Startup Nation, and it was about the tech miracle in Israel. He has a brand new book that was obviously written before the October 7th attack, and the new book is called The Genius of Israel. The subtitle is How is it possible for this nation in the midst of trouble to be as resilient as it is. The surprising resilience of a divided nation in a turbulent world is the subtitle. Dan, congratulations on the book. And are you speaking to us from Israel?
No, I wish I were. I'm in New York City. I will be going to Israel in the weeks ahead. My mother and my sisters and my nieces and nephews are there. Many of them called up, my nieces and nephews serving in regular touch with them. It's both a stressful time and, as I know you know, a stressful time, but also an inspiring time.
It is an inspiring time, and that's one of the stories that people don't seem to get here in the United States. Aside from the fact that the UN designated Israel among the happiest nations on earth.
One of the nicest things the UN has ever said about Israel.
Absolutely one of the few really positive things the UN has ever said about Israel. But given the fact that it won that designation, there are other statistics that show that Israelis have actually approached some of those problems of human happiness and community more successfully than we do here in the United States.
Yeah. So when Saul and I wrote Startup Nation, we realized years later that we left an important piece out of the story of why Israel has such an important innovation economy, such a dynamic innovation economy. What we missed was the number of Israeli entrepreneurs we spoke to told us, you know, one of the reasons they can take big risks to solve big problems is a sense of the country in the best possible way, not in an institutional way, but in a communal way. The country has their back. That putting Israel on the map globally matters to these entrepreneurs, and their fellow citizens are rooting for them. And if they are successful, they're not resenting them. And we were sort of interested in that. We started looking at it because it spoke to us to the health of Israeli society, the societal health. And then we started looking at a bunch of other metrics, and we saw, Michael, which floored us, by the way, we didn't know this, that on just about every single metric in which the U.S. and other affluent Western democracies are falling behind, Israel's moving the other direction. So,
for example,
demographic crisis, right? We have aging and shrinking populations. People in the United States and elsewhere in the West are having fewer and fewer children. There's been a lot of reports coming out on this. In modern human history, we've never dealt with the situation with shrinking populations. It's very unhealthy for society. It's very unhealthy economically for countries. And the U.S. and Europe are hovering around, if not below, the replacement rate, the number of children each mother must have in order for the population to grow. You have some extreme situations like Japan or Italy. In Japan, right now, the population is so small, people are having so fewer children, and it's aging, that the market in Japan for adult diapers is now larger than the market for baby diapers. That's true statistic. We cite it in the book. And the U.S. is not far behind. And Israel's the opposite. Israel's one of the only countries in the world that's way above the replacement rate. Israelis are having lots and lots of children. And it's not just the ultra-Orthodox, by the way. The secular Israelis are having 3, 4, and 5 children per family. Anyway, so I can go through these measures. Life expectancy.
Well, again, I know one of the things that you mentioned in the book is the deaths of despair, which have been so alarming. It's actually caused a decline in the American life expectancy because of all the drug overdoses and the suicides. Israel is very low in terms of deaths of despair, particularly compared to Western nations. Now, if you were to point to, you talk about three factors that help to create what you call the genius of Israel. That is the title of the book, which is posted on our website, michaelmedved.com. You talk about service, community, and belonging. And you also talk about the idea of a Thanksgiving every week. Talk about that and explain that to folks.
Yeah, so that is, I would say, one of my two favorite chapters in the book. And that is to say that communities, we have found, don't create rituals. Rituals create communities. And Israel is a very community-centric country, right? And so we were trying to understand, so what are the rituals that build this country's communities and make Israelis feel like they're part of something larger than just themselves? And we ask Israelis about the routines, and what kept coming back to us from all walks of religious life, very religious Jews, very secular Jews, Jews from the East, Jews from the West, Jews from, you know, the tech scene in Tel Aviv to the struggling towns in the periphery, no matter who you talk to, almost all of them have a Shabbat dinner every Friday night with their family, usually multiple generations, parents, children, grandchildren, sometimes four generations. And I say they do it religiously, literally and figuratively, meaning it's just untouchable. It's sacrosanct. Every Friday night, everything slows down, the country comes to a halt, and they have this time together. Now, when I ask Americans, give me an example of something, because what's unique about Shabbat is not just that people do it with their family, but it's that when they're doing it, they know the whole country is doing it too. So it's not just a family ritual or a communal ritual, it also is a national ritual. So I ask my American friends, tell me an experience you do, a ritual you have with your family, that you know not only that your family's doing it together, and it's a great source of calm and collection with the family and reflection and just real downtime, just sort of getting off the treadmill for a period of time. I said, give me an example where you know the whole country's doing it too. Your fellow Americans are doing it too. And they all say, Thanksgiving. Well, Thanksgiving, that's an example. I say, sure, that's great. Okay, that's once a year. Give me a second example.
And they by the way, the left is trying to undermine Thanksgiving, saying it should not be a gay day of thanks. It should be a day of guilt because of what happened to the Native Americans.
So they're even taking that away from us. And it's just one day a year. And then when I say to Americans, give me another example, and they usually get stuck because they can't think of one. What they usually come up with is the Super Bowl. I know that sounds ridiculous, but they say, well, you know, Super Bowl parties, families. I said, sure, I mean, I love football. We do Super Bowl parties. That doesn't really count, though. And I say to my American friends, what if I told you in Israel they have a Thanksgiving? What you just described, I say to them, as Thanksgiving, they do it every Friday night. Now, imagine what that does for a national culture, because it means you and your fellow citizens can disagree, and you can argue, and you can be noisy and debate, and you can even have polarized politics. But it's hard to split off too far away from one another if every Friday night everyone's getting together with family, with friends, with people they agree with people they don't agree with, and having this ritual of coming together. It's very grounding. It's very healthy for elderly people to have that time every Friday night with young people. It's very healthy for young people for sort of to have some knowledge of intergenerational continuity and tradition to have that time every Friday with older people. So,
Dan, can you? I hope you can hang with us for a little bit further, because we want to learn some of the secrets of the Genius of Israel. That's the name of the new book with Dan Senor. More coming up.
The Michael Medved Show.
Instability, vulnerability, uncertainty, volatility, precarious, unpredictable. Now, all of those words describe our banking system right now, as evidenced by the recent collapse of major banks. Michael Medved here for AmFed Coin and Bullion. This was the second largest bank failure in history, and the Federal Reserve has been scrambling to keep this bank run from spreading. Now, if you feel uneasy about having too much money sitting in the bank, you're not alone. Gold, silver, and platinum have had recent gains as investors look for safe places to park their money. Now more than ever, you need to call my good friends Nick Grovich and Company, owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion. I've been doing business with Nick for many years, and I wouldn't go anywhere else. Nick and his team of specialists will provide you with personalized attention, honest information, and sound advice. If you're interested in buying or selling, call AmFed Coin and Bullion, 800-221-7694, 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com. A lot of times on the Michael Medved Show, we're talking about the present, things that just happened. Sometimes we try to look toward the future, but we also try very seriously to look toward the past. And that's why it's a very good idea right now in this present moment to sign up as a Medhead Plus member. It gives you access to close to 100 history programs on the Medved Show, ranging from the American Revolution to the origins of the State of Israel to the history of political parties in the United States and the Constitution and world struggles like World War I and World War II and, yes, the Vietnam War. All available to you at a minuscule cost of 22 cents a day. Plus access to our show 24/7. Go to MedvedHistoryStore.com. You spend a little, you learn a lot.
What if Extendivite really works, but you find that hard to believe and you spend precious time looking for someone to say, just try it? I have my help today because of Extendivite, and if I did not take a leap of faith and try it, well, I would be on disability today. Take one bottle of Extendivite as suggested for 60 days to find out for yourself. No need to stop any other meds you may be on. You know by now that they are not working for you. Before the 60 days are up, I know that you will feel Extendivite working for you and will want to take another bottle. Life is too short. Get your Extendivite today. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
One of the amazing things about recent news, from the Middle East. Today is the 1 month anniversary of the Hamas pogrom, the Hamas mass killing of Jewish people. There's a real question here, because you would think that with 1,400 people murdered and another 240 taken hostage, that a lot of people would be running away from that. That hasn't been the case. There have been literally thousands of Israelis or people with ties to Israel who have come back to Israel to show their solidarity at a time of strife. That raises the question, how has the tiny country of Israel, beset by external foes and internal strife, stayed so resilient? That question is answered in the new book, sure to be a bestseller, by Dan Senor and Saul Singer. It is called The Genius of Israel, The Surprising Resilience of a Divided Nation in a Turbulent World. Dan, thanks for hanging with us.
Thanks, Michael.
Of keeping this divided nation together, this is something that is a real problem in the United States, where there are many people on the far left, there are many people on the far right, who believe that the other side aren't real Americans, that we have nothing in common anymore. Now, Israel has very, very bitter, angry politics, but still somehow they manage as a country to keep that idea going that we're all one country after all. How can the U.S. learn from Israel's example in that regard?
It's really interesting. So a couple things here. First of all, at the depth of division, which we saw in Israel over this past year during the debate over the judicial reforms, people over here in the U.S. would point to the protesters protesting the Israeli government, and they would compare them to far-left protests in the U.S., whether it's Black Lives Matter protests or whatever it may be. And I would try to point out to them, I'd say, no, you're missing something important. Watch those protests in Israel. You could agree with the protests in Israel. You can disagree with the protests in Israel. Every one of those protests, all you saw was a sea of Israeli flags. They would sing Israel's national anthem. at every protest. They would honor Israel's history. This was not doing, these protests were not out of hate of country. They were of love of country. We chronicle this in our book. We show how Israelis protest in the best possible way, which is to say, we love our country. We're not lighting our flags on fire and stomping on them. We're embracing them. We're hugging them. We're honoring our country's history and its founding impulse and its role in the world. We have some disagreements, okay? People can have disagreements, but when that's your starting point, it's a fundamentally much healthier form of protest, because what you are basically saying is we're all in this together. We just have disagreements, not we resent and hold grievances against our own country. So how does that happen? We cite in the book, we go through a few of these institutions, one of which is the calendars you and I were talking about, Shabbat every week, you know, Thanksgiving every week. The way Israel handles its civic calendar, its non-religious calendar, its Memorial Day. Its Memorial Day is a real Memorial Day. The country, they have a national siren system, which we're now obviously seeing firsthand because it alerts Israelis when there are rockets coming from Hamas. But on Israel's Memorial Day, which is not a shopping day, on Israel's Memorial Day and on Israel's Holocaust Remembrance Day, the sirens go off across the country at the same time. For 2 minutes. We describe this in the book. It's very dramatic. Everyone stops what they're doing for 2 minutes, and they're in the moment together, citizen to citizen, as an entire country. Everyone gets out of their cars on the highways. People walk out of restaurants and hotels and classrooms and stadiums, and they're all in this moment together. It's both personal, meaning people are remembering individual loved ones who have fallen, and it's collective. It's also a national experience. And so we go through in the book these different moments that is built into the Israeli system and culture and calendar to bring the country together. And I don't think we do enough of that seriously. And then secondly, I would say, is the role of the military. Now, most Israelis, as you know firsthand, most Israelis serve in the IDF. But it's not just about defending the country. They also develop incredible skills, incredible management and leadership skills that we wrote about in Startup Nation, and we have a chapter in this book that's sort of the continuation of Startup Nation. But it also brings people together. So you have the son of a cab driver and the son of a tech billionaire, and then the same hull of a tank today fighting in Gaza, and they're together. They're in this moment together, and they're in this country in a very together way. They don't live atomized lives. They have relationships for life, because when you serve in the National Service Program of the IDF, you also have reserve duty, and reserve duty goes into your 40s. So you're with these people from all walks of life into your 40s, and it's just, again, it's very hard to think of your fellow citizen as the other if you are in this mission with them to build and protect your country together. It means you can have disagreements, but you never look at your fellow citizen as the enemy.
One of the points that you make in the book is that in terms of determining a young man or a young woman's future, in the United States, a lot of that, we say, is dependent upon what college you get into. In Israel, it's what unit you serve in the IDF, because people go to do their national service. And by the way, then the government repays them by covering their expenses for college and sometimes for graduate school.
This, Michael, is such an important point, because if you think about the university, the college experience, and many of these colleges, as we both know, have lost their minds. They've been losing their minds for a while, but they're especially losing their minds now. But we show in the book, we compare that experience. The average American trying to get into the best college, it's all about individual excellence. It's all about their own performance. It's how they do in their grades and how they do on their SATs and how they it's all about the individual. In Israel, you can be extremely talented, but you will not get into the best unit if you don't know how to be a teammate, if you don't know how to be part of a group and work in a community. And so the incentives are, learn how to be part of something bigger than me. It's not about me, it's about we. That's the whole culture, and it starts when kids are young there. You see it in the scouting movements, which most Israeli youth participate in. You see it in the gap year programs before college or before the army. You see it in the army. Everything is geared towards being part of something larger than yourself. And again, when you incentivize people to not just focus on your own individual success or excellence, but being part of something larger, it changes the whole culture of the country. And that's the meritocracy in Israel, which is not the meritocracy here.
Okay, last question, because we're almost out of time. What do you think happens next in Gaza after the dismantling of the evil infrastructure of Hamas?
I think that Israel is making much more progress than people realize. I think that 20 days or so that they were bombing from the air served troop purposes. I think they conditioned the battlefield that would make it easier, not that it's easy, but easier to move in the ground incursion like they have been. There's still be Israeli casualties, tragically, but Gaza won't be the meat grinder that it has been in the past. And actually, it also results in fewer Palestinian casualties. You wouldn't know that from the civilian casualties. You wouldn't know that from the media coverage, but that is the net out. I'm cautiously optimistic, and I say cautiously because all military operations anywhere in the world are successful until they're not. And so, you know, things are fragile always. But my sense is Israel's doing this very well. They're making a lot of progress. They have ample resources. People, as you mentioned earlier, have turned out in huge numbers to serve. The number of reservists that have turned out has exceeded the call-up numbers. They have about 120 to 150% turnout. They have more reservists than they know what to do with. So the country, there's like an esprit de corps in the country. People are working together, and the IDF is doing its job. And so I think they need to drive Hamas out of Gaza. I think they'll be successful at that. I think the big challenge then will be what to do with Gaza once Hamas is gone. And I think Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu said in the last 24 hours, Israel's going to probably have to maintain some security presence there for some time until there's a plan to figure out who's going to govern it. But I think like the U.S. fought ISIS, Israel has to figure out how to eradicate Hamas. It's urgent. And then it can figure out what comes next.
Dan Senor, he is the co-author of the marvelous new book, The Genius of Israel, The Surprising Resilience of a Divided Nation in a Turbulent World. It is officially published today. It is worth everyone's attention. It's posted at our website at michaelmedved.com. There's more stories about the impact of Israel and the issue of Israel on American politics. Some amazing disqualifications that you hear from the far left. We will get to that and much more in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.
Trying to sell you.
There's a lot of talk all over the internet these days about the remarkable benefits of Carbon 60, and baby boomers are especially excited about it. Whatever generation you're in, if you want more energy, better health, and a boost in vitality, we invite you to try Gresca's Carbon 60, a stunning development in free radical destruction. Being much smaller in size than conventional antioxidants derived from fruits and vegetables, it is far more bioavailable to quickly mend the toxin-crippled cells in your body. Gresca's Carbon 60 is the only C60 product that is made without the use of undesirable solvents. The only one. Gresca's Carbon 60 was developed by a brilliant NASA carbon scientist, and 95% report positive results from this Nobel Prize winning technology in just 4 days. Visit C-60.com. That's C-60.com or call 720-600-6040.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunnybay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunnybay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunnybay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.